4 minutes after 8 o'clock. Welcome to the Morning Magazine for Wednesday, May 24th. I'm Sam Fuqua, filling in for Shannon Young. Coming up after the headlines, the Colorado River Deal. The agreement announced Monday by California, Nevada, and Arizona helps in the short term, but avoids harder choices necessary for the long-term health of the river and the millions of people who depend on it. We'll talk with Colorado River expert Jack Schmidt. Then Boulder's oldest running event. It's not the Boulder Boulder. Students at Columbine Elementary have run an annual one-mile course around their neighborhood since 1978. We'll bring you some of the voices from yesterday's mile marathon event at Columbine. Our regular Wednesday features, Chris Moore with his commentary, Make Them Hear You, and local herbalist Brigitte Mars with her program, Naturally. After the BBC headlines at 8:30, it's the fourth and final installment of our exploration of the KGNU archive. This morning, interviews with Boulder's own Jello Biafra and legendary poet Amiri Baraka. Music begins at 9:30 with the Morning Sound Alternative. And we begin, as always, with state and local headlines. Here's Jack Armstrong.
Chevron Corporation will soon become the largest oil company in the state of Colorado. That's according to a report from the Colorado Sun, which says Chevron plans to acquire PDC Energy in a $7.6 billion deal. Chevron, which is the second largest U.S. company, is gaining almost 275,000 acres of Colorado soil within the acquisition. Their Weld County acquisition also included a gain of an estimated billion barrels of oil. According to Chevron CEO Mike Wirth, PDC's attractive and complementary assets strengthen Chevron's position in key U.S. production basins. With the deal being sanctioned by both companies, they still need to gain approval from their shareholder boards before their final decision. Kerr McGee Oil was the largest oil company in Colorado before this new Chevron acquisition. The output of 52 million barrels of oil annual produced by PDC and Kerr McGee combined is expected to be outmatched within the coming year after this acquisition. Warm temperatures in recent days have brought major snowmelt drainage problems to western Colorado and the Front Range. The snowmelt has caused significant swells in Colorado River and its offshoots. The Department of Transportation is monitoring for sinkholes, mudslides, and rockfalls all through the western half of the state. Across the northeastern and southwestern parts of Colorado, communities have prepared for flooding while the entirety of the state has been recovering from drought. State water management has simultaneously noticed that the timing for which snow melt hydrates Colorado has been getting later through the years. According to Noah Mulch, associate professor of geography and fellow at the Institute of Arctic Alpine Research at CU Boulder, the snowpack is eroding and disappearing before our eyes. That's going to present challenges in terms of managing the infrastructure that's allowed the western United States to flourish over the last 100 years. Arapaho County commissioners have approved a $10,000 donation assisting Denver with the influx of migrants arriving to the city. Over 4,000 migrants have arrived to the city from Central and Latin America throughout the winter. In response to the influx of migrant arriving to Denver, the city reactivated its Emergency Operations Center. Since December, the city has spent nearly $16 million in aiding the migrants. Arapaho County is donating the $10,000 to the Newcomers Fund, created by the nonprofit Rose Community Foundation, to aid the city of Denver in the burden of assisting the migrants. The Boulder County Board of Public Health has appointed Dr. Alexandra Bombas Nolan as their new executive director. According to a press release from BCPH, Nolan has provided staff and partners with excellent leadership throughout the height of the COVID-19 pandemic and the Marshall Fire recovery. Her leadership will continue to prioritize BCPH's vision through her tenure as executive director of the board. Dr. Nolan has been serving as deputy director for the board since 2020 and has been working in the public health sector for more than 25 years. Her most notable accomplishments include being the Assistant Manager for the World Health Organization's Social Determinants Sector, and becoming the Executive Director of the Center to Eliminate Health Disparities at the University of Texas Medical Branch. CU Boulder will begin construction on two new buildings slated for completion fall 2025. The projects include a newly renovated main campus building, as well as a new residence hall for incoming students. The upcoming CU construction prioritizes energy efficiency while maximizing a new space expansion. Both the newly renovated Helms building, which houses at least one course for 80% of the student body, and the new residence hall will be completed by December of 2025. With the new dormitory north of the current Bear Creek Hall comes further renovations to older buildings such as Ferrand Hall, Cheyenne Arapaho Hall, and Libby Hall. The smoky skies caused by wildfires in Canada will diminish Wednesday, Pam Johnson reports.
Denver air quality is the 17th worst in the world. That's slightly better than last Friday when it was the 4th worst in the world. The smoke trapped over the region is blowing in from wildfires in Canada. Concentrations of wildfire smoke will continue to gradually decrease during the day on Wednesday. According to 9 News, westerly wind should cause levels of smoke to diminish through the end of the week. People with unusual sensitivity to poor air quality should continue to avoid heavy or prolonged exertion through Wednesday afternoon. For KGNU, I'm Pam Johnson.
For the weather today, in Boulder, thunderstorms and showers are likely before 5 p.m. It will be partly sunny today with a high of 74 degrees. Tonight, chance of showers with a low of 50 degrees. In Denver, a high of 77 degrees today. Areas of smoke and smog before 4 p.m. and thunderstorms are likely. Tonight, there will be a low of 52 degrees, with thunderstorms likely between 4 and 11 p.m. For KGNU, I'm Jack Armstrong.
Eight at listener-supported KGNU. On Monday, the lower basin states on the Colorado River, that's California, Nevada, and Arizona, announced an agreement to cut their use of the river's water by about 13% over the next 3 years. The deal avoids federal intervention for now and offers a short-term fix to the long-term issues related to global warming and overconsumption of the river by the 7 states in the region that depend on it, including here in Colorado. For more on the deal, we turn to Jack Schmidt. He's a professor at Utah State University, where he directs the Center for Colorado River Studies. He joins us now from Logan, Utah. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being with us. So give us your overall quick take on this deal announced Monday for the lower basin states.
Well, I think you have to start somewhere. I mean, there's countless analogies. You can only start a path one step at a time. Though, so this is one step, and we ought to congratulate that a step has been made. The agreement essentially averages out to reducing lower basin consumption by 1 million acre feet, which, as you say, is somewhere in the neighborhood of 13 to 15% reduction. In light of this year's big runoff, that sort of gets us into the range where we are matching consumptive use with runoff right now if we use the averages of the past. I think that the other attributes we ought to mention about this deal, one is this deal is accomplished largely by paying farmers not to farm. Is that sustainable? We don't even know if we're going to pass a debt ceiling in a couple days. So we don't even know if this money's going to be available if the whole system collapses. That ought to be kept in mind. The next thing is, if you look over the long term, are those sums of money going to be available in perpetuity in the future? I think that's a serious question.
Well, let me stop you there just so listeners are clear on. So there's over $1 billion in federal money that's in this deal in the form of grants. And if I heard you correctly, most of that money is going to go to farmers to pay them not to grow.
Yes. I mean, the details of all of this are still a bit foggy. Some money is going to go to cities, certainly. And even Nevada is going to decrease some of its use. It's hard to squeeze any more water out of Nevada, but most of the money has to go to agriculture because agriculture is the biggest user of water.
And, you know, a billion is a big number, but in the scheme of a federal budget, it's not that big. I mean, could this be a longer term part of a longer term fix, continuing to pay farmers not to grow water intensive crops?
Sure. Of course, that's possible if the federal government wants to spend that. I think what's important here is let's sort of use some very round numbers. With this reduction, basin-wide water use is going to be probably somewhere in the realm of 13.5 million acre feet, which is sort of the average water supply for the 21st century. Things sort of match. But what this doesn't get us is any significant recovery of reservoir storage. That's important. We're going to need to cut even more. And then we need to remember that all the climate change projections predict that there'll be even greater reductions of additional 1 to 3 million acre feet by 2050. So these cuts are only the beginning of a series of significant cuts. And is that all going to be accomplished by continuing to pay massive amounts out of the federal treasury? That's going to be a significant debate in the future.
And, you know, I've read that one of the big crops that needs a lot of water and is part of agriculture in this region is alfalfa, feeds cows, is reducing meat consumption, just to connect it back to, plant-based diet versus so much animal food in our diet, part of the solution. And maybe that, I don't want to go outside your area of expertise, but it seems to me that reducing the amount of water that goes to crops that feed animals for human consumption may be part of a solution. What do you think?
Well, let's just look at the numbers. Agriculture uses between 70 and 80% of all the water in the basin. The use by municipalities is much less. Recent studies published in Nature and reported widely suggest that about 55% of all the agricultural crops are used for livestock feed, particularly in the upper basin and growing alfalfa in the summertime in the Imperial Valley. I don't think it's unreasonable to say that this water crisis might not actually be all that challenging if we begin to seriously reallocate where we use water. So you are completely right. When you're using more than half of the water for livestock feed, you need to seriously ask the question of whether that's the way we want to proceed in the future.
Well, Jack Schmidt, that's all the time we have right now. We hope to have you back for a longer conversation. Thank you for joining us. Jack Schmidt is the director of the Center for Colorado River Studies at Utah State University. 18 minutes after 8 o'clock now, you're in tune with The Morning Magazine on listener-supported KGNU.
On the next alternative radio, hear Khurram Pervez on Kashmir, telling the story. That's alternative radio, Wednesday evenings at 6, right here on Community Radio, KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins.
Columbine Elementary held its 46th annual mile marathon yesterday. Students line up by grade and run a one-mile course in the streets around their neighborhood school. Here's a few of the voices from yesterday's mile marathon at Columbine.
My name is Rich Castro. I founded this thing in 1978, and it's an amazing event. I was asked to do something fun at the end of the school year by two teachers. It precedes everything in Boulder. It became the catalyst for me to get involved with our community. After that, I started the Boulder Roadrunners, started the biggest road race in Colorado. A couple months later, I put together the first marathon in Boulder. It basically became the catalyst for everything that you see happening within our community. It's amazing. It's a blessing to me to have it continue on and to have the students, faculty, and staff, and most of all the parents, embrace it so warmly.
He just came in second in his class.
This is my first marathon, too.
Really? What's your name?
Trekker.
So how was the run for you?
Good, except I got a cramp in the middle of the race in my arm and my chest.
But you pushed on?
Yeah.
What's your name?
Jose.
How'd it go for you?
Good. Really tiring. Yeah.
Did you practice or?
A little bit. I was playing soccer with my friends, so I think that helped a lot.
What do you think about the event?
It's awesome, because you get a run, you get some exercise, and you can have fun.
Nevaeh, and I'm Rebecca.
What grade?
Fifth.
How'd it go?
It went good.
It went really well. It was really fun.
Yeah.
I really like how it's like all together and it gets people outside.
Yeah, and it gets people exercise and you still get to hang out with your friends.
Do you think you'll be running on as you grow up?
Well, I'm running the Boulder, and I'm going to try to keep
it that way. I think I'm going to do the Boulder with Rebecca. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm Maria Navas Moreno, and I've been the lead organizer of the Mile Marathon for 4 years now.
What does it mean to you?
Oh, man, it means everything. You know, it's a way to bring the community, the school together, and keeping the tradition, you know, that has been going on for 46 years. I have one kiddo that has been at the school since kindergarten, and now she's in fifth grade, so this is my last year.
How are you feeling today?
Do you know, it's emotional. It's both, you know, a big day, and but I'm also kind of relieved. It's a lot of work to put an event like this together, so yeah, I'm happy to pass the baton.
Can you say something about the community building nature of this?
Yeah, you know, Columbine is a school, a super diverse school. It serves kids from different, you know, different backgrounds, different socioeconomical statuses, and we need these kind of events to bring those different backgrounds together, and this, like a sports-like event like this, really does that.
And congratulations to all the student runners. The Mile Marathon yesterday at Columbine Elementary in North Boulder. It's 22 minutes after 8 now. This is listener-supported KGNU. Up next, our weekly commentary from Chris Moore. The segment is called Make Them Hear You.
Make Them Hear You.
This is Make Them Hear You with ideas on how you can have your voice heard before Congress. Before we start, a reminder that the debt ceiling crisis can be resolved unilaterally by Biden either minting a trillion-dollar coin or by invoking the 14th Amendment, as I have mentioned before. If you have thoughts on these last-ditch options, you can contact the White House. In the meantime, the big lie that the 2020 presidential election was stolen has metastasized in voting districts nationwide. The result is predictable. Election workers are quitting in record numbers. In Kentucky, 20% of all county clerks retired last year. NBC told the story of Lindsay Taylor, hired as voting registrar in rural Buckingham County, Virginia, at the center of an attempt by election deniers to oust her. She was harassed in meetings and accused of treason. When her bosses were pressured to fire her, she resigned, along with her entire staff. In Fort Worth, with 2.1 million voters, Hyder Garcia was called, quote, the gold standard of election administrators by the Texas Tribune. He resigned in response to a bogus election integrity task force imposed by a new county judge. Quote, I wish Tarrant County luck in finding somebody as professional, forward-looking, and as focused on transparency and accuracy, said Chris Davis, elections administrator for nearby Williamson County. The Boston Globe found in six states they studied a roughly 30% increase in turnover among election officials since 2020. This will only exacerbate an already critical manpower shortage at a time when trust in elections is historically low and declining. So in 2024, throughout the country, polling places will be understaffed due to all the resignations. Many workers will be inexperienced, creating long lines at the polls and longer lines for the results. The best way to safeguard against the future crisis is by building a broad-based, cross-partisan coalition of election defenders who are willing to stand up for the integrity of the vote. The National Association of Secretaries of State's #TrustedInfo network is a good start. Recently, Amy Klobuchar submitted Senate Bill 1318, the Election Worker Protection Act, to safeguard the civil servants and volunteers who manage our elections, co-sponsored by 22 Democrats and not a single Republican. In addition to funding many nuts and bolts aspects of our election offices in every state, it provides grants to states for election worker safety, Department of Justice training resources for addressing threats to election workers, a grant program to prevent disclosure of personal information of election workers, prohibition of harassment of election workers, a special agent to each field office of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, making intimidation of tabulation, canvass, and certification efforts a crime, prohibition of doxing of election workers, and preventing poll observer interference. If you have thoughts on Senate Bill 1318, the Election Worker Protection Act, you can contact your senators and representative. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
Make Them Hear You, a regular feature of the Wednesday Morning Magazine here on listener-supported KGNU. Our other regular Wednesday visitor, it's Brigitte Mars with her program, Naturally.
Greetings. Welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars. You know, a lot of people are bothered by eczema. You know, that itchy, rashy, scaly thing. It's always good to look at where on your body is it. Is it over a particular organ? Is it in, you know, one of the acupuncture meridians, even if it's not over an organ? Like, is it over the lung meridian or over the kidney meridian? It's always good to look at, too, what was going on when this started. So there's many reasons why people have eczema. And I'm always willing to look at food allergies as one of the first recourses. Unfortunately, very often it's something that we love. The food we love the most can be the culprit. Could be dairy, could be gluten, could be corn, could be soy, could be any one of those things. And sometimes allergy testing is not that accurate. You know, an allergy test might test if your skin reacts to it, but it's possible that it takes quite a few uses of that in a week's time to set off a reaction. And of course, some things might cause inflammation, not only in the skin, but also in the brain, the joints, our moods, our lungs. So many people that do have eczema find that taking a fish oil supplement is helpful, helping the body to metabolize fats. And if you don't eat fish oil, which is fine with me, there are some vegan alternatives that are made from algae. And but be really careful about the kind of oils you eat. I think it is wise to totally avoid things like canola and corn oil, soy oil. This might mean making your own salad dressing. So I'm big on make your own salad dressing with extra virgin olive oil, which is the first pressing. And then for cooking, you might want to use coconut oil. There are some herbs that are wonderful allies for our skin, and these would be things that you would make into a tea and drink perhaps 3 or 4 times a day. And the herbs that I think of, because they help the body metabolize fats, are burdock root, Arctium lapa, dandelion root, and this would be the raw root, not the roasted root, and Oregon grapefruit, Berberis aquifolium. And you could also add some red clover blossom to that. If you visit a place like Rebecca's Apothecary, they have some teas already made up that will help you with not only eczema, but psoriasis and acne too. And I just have to say, peanut butter might not be your friend. It's got hydrogenated oils in it, a mold called aflatoxin. So eczema, there are things you can do. You don't want to sign up for a lifetime of steroids. They have their own side effects. So be really careful about what you use topically on your scalp and skin, of course. So find some natural products that are designed. Anything with a little bit of tea tree oil or apple cider vinegar might be your ally. So a few things to think about. There's a lot more information in my book, Beauty by Nature. Thanks for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.
You can hear Brigitte Mars every Wednesday morning here on the KGNU Morning Magazine. I want to thank Alexis Kenyon, Jack Armstrong, Pam Johnson, Chris Moore, and Brigitte for their contributions to the program today. And if you're a member of KGNU, thank you for making everything we do possible. Stay with us in just a few minutes. We're going to have the fourth and final installment of our From the Archives series, Boulder's own Jello Biafra and the poet Amiri Baraka featured voices during this episode. Our day of eclectic music begins, as always, with the Morning Sound Alternative at 9:30. National weather forecast says we might get some showers and thunderstorms today. The smoke from the Canadian wildfires is still with us, although it's forecast to be a clearing out by 3 o'clock or so today. Mostly cloudy with highs in the mid-70s along the Front Range. Overnight lows near 50 degrees. Sunny with a chance of rain tomorrow. Forecast highs for Thursday in the upper 70s. And a reminder that KGNU's plant sale is coming up on Sunday, June 4th. If you have some donations, give us a call here at the station, 303-449-4885, and we'll put you in touch with the right people. And we hope you can join us June 4th for our annual plant sale. It's 8:30 at listener-supported KGNU. Stay tuned for headlines from the BBC.
BBC